Okay, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. This coming Shabbos is Parshas Bamidbar. Okay, this Shabbos is Parshas Bamidbar. Bamidbar is referred to in the Gemara as Chumash HaPkudim because it starts with the census of the Jewish people. What was the role of the census? What was the purpose? Every country has to have an army to protect themselves. So the Jewish people needed an army also. And the way Rashi points out, they only drafted you into the army if you're over the age of 20. And you have to, the Muhammads, a lot of the Muhammads were the Maila Min Ateva, everything was with Nisim and Flaz. But you have to, Ein Samach Mal Anes, you have to take a census to see how many soldiers there are and have them divided up into battalions. So that was the purpose, that was the role of the census that they took. They had to take a census, each Shevet individually. And the Pasuk implies, Lemishpachoisam Leveis Avoisam, Pasuk base, if there was a mixed marriage where the father was from one Shevet, the mother was from another Shevet, so what is the status of the children? So the Halacha says, Lemishpachoisam Leveis Avoisam, Mishpacha Sab Kuyim Mishpacha, Mishpacha Seim, Ene Kuyim Mishpacha. We have different dinim in the Chumash that depend on relatives. Let's say you have Kroivim Apostle Eidus, and there's a din of Yerusha, and then there's a din of Gilei Arayis, certain relatives you're not allowed to marry. So the Torah by the Gilei Arayis, it says, Ishi shall call Sheir Besorai, Lasikabu Lagalsa, but the expression used is Sheir Bosa. Sheir Bosa includes relatives from the mother's side and relatives from the father's side. By Yerusha, it says, Aloshan Mimishpachta B'Yorosho, so only Mishpacha Sab Kriya Mishpacha. Mishpacha same ain't a Kriya Mishpacha. Same thing, Psule Edis. That's a question. The Rambam writes that Kroivim Mitzad Ho'aim are Psulim La Edis Medibre Sofrim. So that's a question whether he means Medirabbanan or he means Torah Shabbal Peh. Because the Mishnah there thinks that just like he wrote that Kedusha Kesef in the beginning of Hilchas Shisa Ishus, there's a famous Rambam. Rambam says that Kedusha Shtar and Kedusha Bia are based on Torah Shebichzav, and Kedusha Kesef is Dibrei Sofrim. So the Pashta says he doesn't mean that it's Midirabban, it means that it's Torah Shebal Peh. So over here also the Kesef Mishnah says sometimes Dibrei Sofrim, the expression Dibrei Sofrim in the Rama means Torah Shebal Peh, something that the Sofrim developed or discussed or transmitted. So it includes both Dinim of the Araisa that are Torah Shebal Peh and Dinim Derabban are also called Dibrei Sofrim. So sometimes you can't tell. But that's how the Kesef Mishnah learns. Just like he understood the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchas Ishus, that Kedusha Kesef, Dibrei Sofrim, does mean Medirabban, means Torah Shebal Peh. So the Kesef Mishnah thinks the same is true regarding Psuli Edis by Kroivim Mitzad Ho'aim. He thinks that is Daraisa. Okay, but we usually distinguish that the Chaloshem Sheir Basar applies both to Kroivim from the mother's side and the father's side. And the Chaloshem Kurva, the relationship of Mishpacha is only Mishpacha Sav. Yeah, that's the Gemara says. The Gemara says, what if you have a mixed marriage by non-Jews? The Halacha gives a special status to Amun Amoyav. Loyav Amoni Moyavi B'Kal Hashem. Only Amoni B'la Amonis, the women may, the men may not. So there's a special din for Amon Amoyav, special din for Mitzvah, the Doimid, or Shlishi Yavalahem Kal Hashem, special din for Amalekim, and a special din for the Zainumas. So what if you have a couple who have a mixed marriage? The father is one nationality, the mother is a different nationality. How do you determine the status of the children when you have a mixed marriage? So the Halacha says, Ba'umas Halacha Achar HaZocher, it's all determined by the father. You ignore the status of the mother. It's all determined by the father. If you have a mixed marriage where both parents are Jewish, also it's determined by the father, whether the child is a Kohen Levi, Shevet Yisachar, Shevet Zvulun. That's this Pasuk and Pasuk base in Chumash Bamidbar. It's determined by the father. When you have a mixed marriage where one parent is Jewish, one parent is non-Jewish, so then Tosis points out in Yevamos at the end of the first parak on Tezayin on the base, there's a big fat Tosis there. So Tosfos points out that there are three opinions in the Gemara. What opinion is that when you have, in order for the children to be Jewish, you have to have both parents have to be Jewish. If only one is Jewish, the other one is not, the child is not Jewish. The other sheet in the Gemara has been adopted in recent years by the Reform and the Conservative, patrilineal descent, either father or the mother. If either the father or the mother is Jewish, then the children are all Jewish. That sheetah was outvoted 2,000 years ago, in the days of the Tanaim. And the third sheetah is that it all depends on the mother. You ignore the father, it all depends if the mother is Jewish. Why shouldn't there have been a fourth sheetah? Rabbi Kivega there on the Gilyan Ashas, he asks on Tosfos, where did they find three opinions in the Gemara? He says, I don't know. The Mishnah says in Yevamos, it all depends on the mother. So the Chazon Ish has a short paragraph in the Sefer on Yevamos, but he shows where all the three opinions appear in the Gemara. Correct, Rabbi Kivega is correct. You look in the Mishnah quotes the accepted opinion, la halach, it all depends on the mother. But Tosfos is not saying that that's the din. They're saying there were two other opinions in the days of the Tanaim and the days of the Amoraim. There was an opinion that either parent is Jewish makes the child Jewish. And the other opinion was that you need both parents to be Jewish. The accepted opinion, the accepted sheet is the way it says in the Mishnah, all depends on the mother. Why shouldn't there have been a fourth opinion? And that should have been the accepted. It should all depend on the father. If you have a mixed marriage and the both parents are Jewish, it depends on the father. If you have a mixed marriage and the both parents are not Jewish, one is Amaleki, one is an Amayni, one is a Mitzvi, it all depends on the father. Why shouldn't it be the same over here? If you have a mixed marriage and one parent is Jewish, one parent is not Jewish, why shouldn't it depend on the father? Why do you have to make all the three logical possibilities? And the fourth logical possibility is the most logical, that nobody holds like that. Why not? Why doesn't anybody hold like that? So the answer, I think, is simple. Because the nations of the world are called mishpachas. And this is a din, mishpachosim levesavosim, mishpachas avkriyim mishpacha, mishpachas emenikriyim mishpacha. Do you belong to mishpachas Amalek? Do you belong to mishpachas Amon Amoyim? Do you belong to mishpachas Chiti, Amori, Aprizi? To be Jewish is not a is clearly not a function of what mishpacha you belong to. We believe there is an institution of Geirus. A non-Jew can convert and he becomes Jewish. He's not mishpacha with anybody. He's no longer mishpacha with his previous relatives because Geirush and his guy could cut in Shanel Adami. And it's for sure he didn't get married yet. He doesn't have any Jewish mishpacha at all, and nonetheless he's Jewish. So that sheet is out of the question. To say that to determine whether the children are Jewish should depend on the father, like in Kol HaTorah Kula, mishpacha sav kriyim mishpacha, cannot apply to determining that the children should be Jewish, because that's clearly not a function of mishpacha. We believe in the institution of Geirus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, lech lecha me'artzecha v'nivrechu b'cha, I'll make you into a nation, goy. By the Umas Olam, there's no concept of a nation. Mishpachos Adama, they're mishpachas. In Tanakh, they're referred to as goyim, goy who are rotzes. That's a slang expression. Strictly speaking, the only goy, mikam chisol goy echad bar, so Jewish people are the only goy. Goy means a gviya. Gviya means a body. So the whole nation is considered like one entity, like one body. By the Umas Olam, there is no such cloud. The Gemara said Beferish in the end of Nozir and Perek Hakusim, the very end of Masechas Nozir, that the concept of Tzibur and Kohol and Eidah only applies to the Jewish people. By the Umas Olam, there is no such concept. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu, Ve'eschol Goy, your children will become a Goy, one big Gibeah, one big body. V'nivruchu b'chol kol mishpuchoy so Adam, how do you translate V'nivruchu? So the Ibn Ezra translates Miloshen Havroche, that the nations of the world will be able to marry into, will be able to convert and join on. Like you graft on a branch from one tree, you break off a branch from one tree, you graft it onto another tree. That's called Havroche. So the Ibn Ezra interprets, I think the Rashbam maybe also interprets like that, Pirish Amilus. It doesn't mean Rinevruchu Beloshen Broche, that the others learn, Rashi learns like that, Loshen Brocha. Then when the Goyim will give a Brocha, they say, you should be successful like Avraham Avinu. You should be successful like the local rabbi, like the Jewish people are successful. But the other Rishonim translate, Nivruchu Miloshen HaBrocha. Avraham Avinu was told that we accept Gerim. We will accept Gerim. The Jewish nation don't necessarily have to be the biological descendants of Avraham Avinu. Whoever wants to can join the Jewish people. So again, that's... That's the din that the Gemara learns out from this pasuk, that mishpacha sav kriyim mishpacha, mishpacha seim ein kriyim mishpacha. And the purpose of the census was for the army. You're not supposed to draft people into the army younger than 20. The Israeli government does draft people younger than 20. It's Keneged Adin, the way Rashi seems to. Rambam never quotes this din. Question is, was he relying on the Chumash? The Rambam writes in the introduction to his Sefer Mishneh Torah, all you have to do is read what it says in Tanakh, read my book, and you know there is, you know all there is to know in Halacha Lamaisa. So if you read the Chumash, you see that you have to be 20 years old. Just because the Rambam left it out doesn't necessarily mean that he disagrees. But Rashi over here says, he sees from the Pasuk, you don't draft people into the army if they're younger than 20. So some want to say the Rambam disagrees because the Rambam never quoted it. It could be he feels he doesn't have to quote it. If it's a Pasuk in the Chumash, he doesn't have to quote it. Ramban raises the question when Moshe Rabbeinu is here, Moshe Rabbeinu with the 12 Nesiim are taking the census of Bnei Yisrael. So how do they take the census? Ramban suggests in Chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu went to each tent and he asked the father of each household, write down on a piece of paper how many people there are in your family. So he would write the husband's name, the wife's name, and the children, the sons, and the daughters. And Moshe Rabbeinu would look at the, and he put all the piece of paper together, and they added them up, and they came to this number, the Sheish Me'asel of Son, the Shishim Ribo. So the Hasidish Rebbes have a practice that you give a kvittel. You write on a piece of paper the name of all the members of the family, and the Rebbe looks at it and gives a bracha. That's based on this Ramban. Ramban HaChumash says, how did Moshe Rabbeinu take the census? He went with the 12 Nesiim, Elishmos Anashem Shiyamdu Itchem, and so on. They went to every tent, and every head of the household gave him a list of all the names in the family, and Moshe Rabbeinu would look at the names and give them a blessing. So this is the original mocker of the practice of giving a kvittel to the Rebbe with the names of the members of the family is the Ramban on this pasuk. After the pasuk lists off all of the 12 Nesiim that Moshe Rabbeinu has to have with him to take the census, so it says, Ele Kruei Ha'ido. How do you translate Kruei Ha'ido? So Rashi and Pasuk Tezayin translates, I think everybody learns that, Kruei Ha'ido means those who would gather together to discuss communal issues. So the Ramban has an interesting comment on Parshas Emor. Shabbos and Yom Tov are referred to as Mikra Kodesh. And the Davening also referred to Mikra Kodesh Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well, how do you translate Mikra Kodesh? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah seems to translate Mikra Kodesh, you should recite Kiddush. You should, Mikra means recite Kiddush. Declare the day as a holy day. Ramban translates it Miloshin Kruei Ho'eda. Mikra Kodesh means that Shabbos and Yom Tov is a day of holy assemblage, that the Jewish people have a special mitzvah to gather together on Shabbos and Yom Tov to lay in Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibur and to daven Tefillah B'Tzibur. All week long, it's a recommended, it's a good idea. You stand a better chance of having your prayers accepted if you daven B'Tzibur than if you daven B'Yochid. The moshel the Gemara gives is if you buy a whole bushel of apples and you're going to have one rotten apple from 150, so you can come back to the store and say, I want my money back, I want you to switch. It's understood there's going to be a rotten apple in a big barrel. But if you only bought one apple, and the one apple was rotten, so that's a mekach toes. So if a person offers his prayers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he may be a rotten apple. Maybe the Baruch Shalom is not interested in accepting his prayers. But if he dams together with the tzibur, so one rotten apple together with everybody else will be accepted. The Baruch Shalom will accept your prayers, even if you happen to be the rotten apple. Stand a better chance of having your prayers accepted. So that's all week long. But on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's a special mitzvah in HaTorah to daven tefillah b'tzibur. There's a prima godim has a very big chiddush in Hilchos Shavuos. He writes this chiddush that at the beginning of the night, a lot of people stay up to learn. And then when it comes 12 o'clock, all the people go to sleep. And then 1, 2 o'clock, all the people go to sleep. By the time comes in the morning, only the younger people are awake and all the older people already went to sleep. So he raises an issue, the minyan that they're going to have in the morning, Tfilah B'Tzibur on Yom Tov is a din d'oraisa, according to this Ramban, and the Beis Yosef in Hilchos Pesach thinks that the Mesadre HaTfilah, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah who composed the Nusach HaTfilah, probably thought like the Ramban. Otherwise, why did they introduce that phrase Mikra Kodesh into the Tfilah? Mikra Kodesh means a day of holy assemblage. We're all going to daven tefillah b'tzibur. So it has a shaychus with the davening. That's how the Beis Yosef thinks. So the Prima Gordim says that the Gemara has a discussion. A boy reaches the age of 13 and becomes bar mitzvah. He really has to have shana v'simon. He has to have shtei sairis be'eva ha'erva. Who checked them to see if he has the shtei sairis? So we usually assume for dinim deraisa, you have to check for dinim derabanan, and it's not necessary to check. So that you have to say, you need a minion to say a dovish b'kedusha. So we usually assume that din is only midirabanan, that you require a minion for dovish b'kedusha. So we rely, kol shehigil l'chlal shanim, higil l'chlal simanim. If the boy is already 13 and the girl is already 12, they probably have the shtei sairis, we don't have to check. With respect to dinim deraisa, and the Magen Avraham writes in one place, with respect to all dinim deraisa, you have to check to make sure. So if you come to shul on Yantav morning, you have 100 people there, 100 men, so mistama, 10 of the adults are going to be bar mitzvah for sure. So you don't have to worry, maybe half of the people don't have shtei sairis. So what? But you have among 100 people, and probably not for sure, you're going to have 10 who do have shtei sairis. So what bar mitzvah? But on Shavuos morning, that you barely have a minion, you only have 15 people, and maybe a lot of that are young, and the younger people, and they're just barely bar mitzvah. So maybe you shouldn't rely on that. He assumes that tefillah b'tzibur is deraisa, and Yantav means every tefillah should be tefillah b'tzibur. One can say you daven one tefillah b'tzibur on Yantav, must be, or you can say it's a chayvus hatzibur to organize that there should be tefillah b'tzibur. So there's going to be a later minion. There's a vasikin minion. For those who stayed up all night, then it's going to be a regular minion. So the tzibur fulfilled tefillah b'tzibur. The Prima Gordim has a mechudish dika understanding that this Ramban that's quoted by the Beis Yosef in Hilchas Pesach, that Yom Shabbos Yom Tov have to be mechudish and need tefillah b'tzibur deraisa, means every tefillah that you daven on Shabbos Yom Tov should be tefillah b'tzibur. Wow. But that's where he got it from. The Ramban got it from this pasuk design. El kroy ha'eda. Kruheh means those who gather together. So the Losh and Mikra Kodesh means the day of holy assemblage on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the Pasuk gives us the census of every Shevet, and then they add everything up together, and it's over 600,000. What's the significance? Why does the Chumash have to tell us this? So many of the Rishonim are of the opinion there was a major machloikas in Hilchot Shabbos, one of the last of the 39 Malachas says, Hoytzor. If you carry in the Rishus HaRabim Dalaram, so if you carry from Rishus HaYochid into the Rishus HaRabim. So there's a group of many Rishonim, they had a Girus in the Gemara. We don't have it anymore. They had the Girus in the Gemara that it's only a Rishus HaRabim Deraisa if it's the way it was in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, that there were Shishim Riba people traveling on the highway when they were traveling in the Midbar. So that's why the Chumash writes the number Shishim Riba, and the Rashash points out that when the Rishonim say you need Shishim Riba, it's a little inaccurate. It means Shishim Riba plus plus change. It's not only Shishim Riba. Why should they establish based on this pasuk that that's the din for the definition of Shus Rabim Daraisa? So the Torah tells us that there was a special Hayruah Shah, how they had to travel in the Midbar. There were four Dgolim, and each Degel had three Shvatim, and altogether there were the 12 Shvatim, and the Levim had to be Saviv al Mishkan Yachanu, special way to travel. This was only a Hayruah Shah. There is no such thing. L'doris had to travel. It's Hayru Asha. Hayru Asha of what? Hayru Asha of had to travel. So the Gemara understood, no, it's a Hayru Asha of Binyan HaMishkan. There's a mitzvah of Yosel LeMikdash to build a base HaMikdash. And the days of the Midbar, there was a Hayru Asha has to be a Mishkan. A specific style of a base HaMikdash has to be a Mishkan. And when they were traveling in the Midbar, the traveling was a Hayru Asha had to re-erect the Mishkan in a new location. So it had to do with Asiyas HaMishkan. And the Gemara tells us on the first daf in Baba Kama, how did the Tanoim determine which are the Lametes of his Malachas? So they determined based on the Pesukim and Chumash that the Torah tells us we should build a Mishkan, but not be Mechal Shabbos in building the Mishkan. Binyan HaMishkan is not Becha Shabbos. So the Gemara derives from that, whatever was a major activity that was important in Asiyas HaMishkan is considered a Malacha. Whatever is not a major activity is not considered a malacha. That's how we established. So what do you mean, asiyas hamishkan? Not hakrovas hakarbonis. There's a machlekes, some goyim hold hakrovas hakarbonis. The Egel Ital in his introduction to his sefer quotes this machlekes. Some goyim say not only what was necessary in asiyas hamishkan, even what was necessary for hakrovas hakarbonis. And most of the Rishonim assume not so. Only hachdahavi b'mishkan chashivin constructing the mishkan. So constructing the mishkan includes traveling in the midbar, carrying all the things, all the parts of the mishkan, to bring it to the new location. So that's why the dinim of haitzah, the malach of haitzah, has learned that, the Gemara says, learned that from the traveling in the midbar. So because in the midbar there was shishim ribo, that's how half of the rishonim insist that in order to be considered a rishus harab deraisa, you have to have shishim ribo people. That's why the pasuk ends off. It's a striking lashon. It says, pasuk nun dalad v'yasim en esok echol ha-shatziv Hashem es Moshe kein osu. The term mitzvah is a technical term that only applies to a mitzvah that applies throughout all the generations. If something is only ha-roshah, a temporary din, it's not called a mitzvah. That's the Rashi in the first pasuk on tzav. Eloshin tzav, eloshin ziris miyad uladeris. Rashi is quoting from the Tanoim, from the Sifro. It only qualifies as a mitzvah if it's noig l'doris. That's the Rambam and the Sefer Mitzvahs has 14 klolim to determine which mitzvahs, which obligations should be included in the counting of the tayag mitzvahs, which not. So the Rambam has the second klal is only a mitzvah that's noig l'doris. You don't count dinim the rabbanon he has, and you don't count dinim that are only hayru ashur. You only count dinim that are noig l'doris. How can the pasuk say v'yasim v'neisal kol ha-shatziv Hashem es Moshe? The traveling in the midbar was a hayru ashur. It's not a din l'doris. The answer is no, but binyan hamikdash is a mitzvah l'doris. The also lemishkan is a mitzvah l'doris. The details, these details happen to be ha'iru asha. So the pasuk can use the expression, v'yasa b'nei Yisrael, v'chol ha'shatziv Hashem, they were fulfilling the ha'iru asha of that mitzvah l'doris. There is such a mitzvah l'doris. The pasuk tells us that the role of the Levim was... The Levim was Shomer Mishmeres HaKodesh. The Levim had to sing Shira, okay, and had to lock the gates. They were divided into two groups, Sharim and Mishorim. Sharim were the ones who sang, and Mishorim were the ones who locked the gates, opened the gates, locked the gates, and so on. They had to assist the Kohanim. But the Levim had to be the palace guards. The Rambam writes, not necessarily that we're afraid someone's going to steal something from. Someone may steal something from the Beis HaMikdash, okay, but that's not the main purpose of the Shmiras HaMikdash, to protect the Beis HaMikdash from theft. It's rather that if you have a palace that has guards in front, it's more b'kavodik. So that's a question, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash now, the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva, maybe we should organize that we should have Levim standing in front of the Mokam of the Mishka, the Beis HaMikdash used to be, to stand guard to fulfill the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash. So the Avnei Nezer thinks that that's a joke. If you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, what do you mean palace guards? It enhances the beauty of the palace. There's no palace. So it doesn't make sense to have palace guards. There was a big Talmud Chacham who was very famous, Rab Chaim Zimmerman. He was he learned in Europe. He was Rab Baruch Be'er's nephew. He learned by Rab Baruch Be'er. Then he learned in YU, by Rab Moshe Soloveitchik. Then he was the head of the Skoki Yeshiva. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. For a while, he learned by Rav Kook, a big Talmud Chacham. So he published the whole Dvar Torah. He thought not like the Avnei Nezer. He wanted to organize all the Levim should get together today. They should take turns to be the palace guards of the Mishnah. Yeah, the Pashtus is like the Avnei Nezer said, that this mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash, to have guards in front of the Beis HaMikdash, only makes sense if you have a palace. If you don't have the palace, even if you hold Kitcha Losi Lava, the Mokam HaMikdash has Kedusha, but there's no palace, so it doesn't make sense to have palace guards. It's interesting, in chapter Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Menasa Amoy, Machane Halvim, Socha Machnas, Kashiach, Nukeng, Yiso, Ishal Yodol, Ledig Lehem. From the Psukim, Rav Elvela Soloveitchik points out, even without Rav Elvela, it would appear like that. There seem to be two different dinim over here. There's one din that's a hirasha, that when they travel in the midbar, traveling is a hirasha binyan mishkan in a new location. This machna should go first, that machna should go second, and so on. And the levim, and when they travel and when they encamp, the levim should be in the middle. That's a hirasha. That part is a hirasha. And it was also Hayroa Shah, the Doris, there was a din, there's three machnas. Machna Shechina is the Azora, and the Harabais has a din of Machna Leviya. And then the whole Yerushalayim has a din of Machna Yisrael. So in the Midbar, the Levim encamped immediately around the Mishkan, so that had the status like Harabayis, that whoever was a Zava, Tuma Yotzen and Megufa, wasn't permitted to go in that area. If a person would be a Tomei Meis, he was allowed to go. Not allowed to go into the Azorah, Machna Shechina, but a Machna Leviya, a Tomei Meis is permitted to go. But a Zav, one who has a Tumah Yotzeh and a Megufa, is not allowed to go into the Machna HaLeviyim. So that was the Hairu HaShoah. And then there's another din that the Leviyim had to do Shmiras HaMikdash. They were the palace guards around the Beis HaMikdash. When the Leviyim traveled, it says later in Chumash Bamidbar, when they were traveling in the Midbar, excuse me for 1 minute, I'll be right back. I apologize. Okay. We left off by the Levim. Yeah. So there was one din that was only Hairu HaShoah, and one din Lederis. Din Lederis says that you need Shmir. Part of the job of the Levim, Lederis, is to stand guard in the Beis HaMikdash. Some locations they had Kohanim standing guard, and some locations they had Levim. That's a Mishnah Maseches Tamid. That's a discussion why. And some of the Levim who were standing guard were not even Bar Mitzvah. So that's the question. Why did they allow the children younger than Bar Mitzvah to do the Mitzvah? They should have insisted you need Dafke people who are Bar Mitzvah. So the Menchas Chinuch has a discussion of that. So the one din is a din l'dor is that the Levim should function as Shomei Mishmeres HaMikdash. They should be the palace guards. And the other din was the Hairu HaShoah, that was part of the din, the Hairu HaShoah of traveling, was that the Levim, where the Levim were encamped around Oel Moed, had the din of Machna Leviyah, And one who had a tumah yotzei l'megufa wasn't allowed to be it. And l'doris, that's the whole harabais, has that din. Or the Ramban points out later in, I think, in Bahal Oischa, Nosa Bahal Oischa, the Ramban points out that based on the Chumash there, here it's unclear, that when they traveled in the Midbar, there were four degolim. First, one degol, it says who goes first, who goes second, and so on. Then it says that Gershon and Merari left at one point, and Kohos left at a later point. It's unclear whether Gershon and Merari, the Levim, Gershon and Merari left in between the first degel and the second degel, and Kohos left in between the second and the third degel. Or another source in Tanoim, the Brisa Malachas HaMishkan says that Gershon Merari left after the second degel, and Bnei Kohos left after the third degel, in between the third and the fourth. And the Gemara has an interesting chiddush din that the Machna Levir retained its status even while they were traveling in the Midbar. How did the din of Machna Levir? Even they weren't in a specific location, they were traveling and moving still. So the question is, which of the two had the status? The Psukim said later that Gershon and Merari traveled first, either between the first and the second, between the second and the third. And then Bnei Kohos traveled afterwards, Degel after. So did both areas, both where Gershon and Merari were and when they were traveling, and Kohos, both locations had the status of Machna Levia, that anyone who had a Tumah Yetzel and a Megufay wouldn't be allowed to enter, or maybe only the Machna Kohos. So Rav Avila Soloveitchik quotes Rashi in Maseches Vachim, and he points out the simple reading of the Pasuk Yud Zayim, and also Oil Moed Machna Ha'avim. When they were traveling, only Bnei Kohos carried the Mishkan. Gershon and Merari carried the other things. The Nosei Ha'oran were Bnei Kohos. So he has sources from the Brisa and Malachas HaMishkan that only the location where Bnei Kohos were traveling had the status of Machna Levia while they were traveling. And the location where Bnei Merari and Bnei Gershon were did not have the status. When they were stationary, then it had the whole area had the status of Machna Levia. When they were traveling, the only location that retained the status of Machna Levia was Bnei Kohos, where they were. So that's why it says, while they're traveling, which one has the status of Machna Levim? Only where the oil moed is. An interesting kiddush. How come the Levim are not included in the count? So the Rambam has a famous comment in the end of Hilchas Shmita B'Yovel. The Rambam writes that Shevet Levi was not drafted into the army. Other Rishonim disagree. Shevet Levi were drafted into the army. Where did Rama get it from? Because the opening pasuk says they took a census of all of the Shvatim, but not including Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi is not included. And the purpose of the census was to establish how many men are there over the age of 20 who will be drafted into the army. So it sounds like Shevet Levi was not drafted into the army. Then you have the Psukim and Parshas Matos. The Chumash tells about Mechemes Midyan. So it says, they took Elef Lamata, Shteimasa, Elef Chalutzei Tzavo. They took 1,000 soldiers from each Shevet and added up to 12,000. And so how do you have 12,000? But there were 12 Shvatim without Shevet Levi. So the Rambam says, because Yosef was divided into two, Menashe Ephraim. And every Shevet gave 1,000, so there should have been 13,000. So the Rambam's answer is Shevet Levi didn't serve in the army. Shevet Levi never served in the army. That's how the Rambam says. Why is that? So the Rambam says, because Shevet Levi, it says, Yoram Mishpatecha Liyankim Seirozcha Liyisrael. Shevet Levi are supposed to be the Levim, and the Kanim are supposed to be the Rabbanim, supposed to be the Dayanim, supposed to be the Malamdim. Those who are the rabbis, those who teach Torah to the public. So the din is you're not supposed to draft Talmidei Chachamim in the army. So the whole Shevet Levi was supposed to be the international kollel of Klal Yisrael. They're supposed to all be sitting and learning, and we have to support them. So that's why Shevet Levi never got a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. They're not supposed to be farmers. not supposed to be in business or industry. They're supposed to be sitting and learning and teaching Torah. So that's why the Rambam says, that's why Shevet Levi was not drafted into the army. And then the Rambam adds on a line that became famous in recent years, that any individual not from Shevet Levi who wants to volunteer to sit and learn in a kollel, he becomes an honorary member of Shevet Levi, and you don't draft him into the army either. That's what all the kollelim in the world have made popular, that Rambam, that whoever volunteers to sit and learn becomes an honorary member of Shevet Levi. Other Rishonim disagree. They hold Shevet Levi was drafted into the army. The question is whether you drafted Kohanim into the army, because an army, it goes to war and they shoot to kill. So there are going to be dead bodies all over the place if you're at a battle. And the Kohanim are not allowed to be Metamela Mason. So this was an issue that was brought up in recent years, in the early 1900s. I think it was Rabbi Nathan Adler was the chief rabbi of the British Empire. At that time, there used to be a British Empire. And the Kohanim, I think at the time of the First World War, if I'm not mistaken, the Kohanim said, you can't draft us in the army. We're not allowed to be Metamela Mason. So he discussed it with the members of the London Bezdin. They always had prominent Rabbanim in the London Bezdin. And they said, no, from the Gemara and the Rishonim, you see, not only do you draft Shevet Levi, you draft Kohanim as well. Because the Gemara talks about the din of Yifas Toyar. A soldier in the army who wants to marry the non-Jewish girl whom he kidnapped, whom he captured as a prisoner of war. So the Torah has all the dinim of Yifas Torah. So the Gemara has a shaila. What if there's a Kohen who's in the army and he wants to marry a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Gioris. So is he allowed to marry the Yifas Torah? A regular Jew is not allowed to marry a Nochris. So here we bend a little bit. The Torah is lenient. The Torah allows the Jewish soldier to take the Yifas Torah, even though her conversion is not, even though she doesn't convert, as she converts against her wishes, it's a problem. So it's a chiddush. But maybe the Chiddush doesn't apply to a Kohen because the Kohen has a double Issa. Even if she will convert out of a full agreement, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Ger. So that's a discussion in the Gemara. So if the Kohen are not drifting into the army, so what's the whole discussion? The Heter for Yifas Torah is only for one who's a soldier in the army. So that's what the Mordechai in Gittin points out this Gemara in Kiddushin. And the later post can quote that. You see that you draft not only Levim, you draft Kohanim into the army as well. We mentioned it on a previous occasion. The Rabbi Shlomo Levilner wrote a Sefer Binyan Shlomo, and he had a whole essay. He was a Kohen. Shlomo Levilner was a Kohen. He had a Chiddush that a Kohen cannot be the Bal Korei on Shabbos Parsha Zohar, because the Sefer Chinuch writes that women are not mechuyev to hear Parsha Zohar, because the reading of Parsha Zohar is only necessary for men who have to serve in the army, who can serve in the army. So they have to remember, when it comes time, you have to join the army to fight Amalek. Women are not drafted into the army, so they're not mechuyev to hear Parsha Zechar. Abshalom Levilna came with a chiddush that Kohanim are not drafted in the army either, so therefore they're not mechuyev to learn Parsha Zechar. So if they're not mechuyev, then they can't be the Bal Korei to be mechuyev to the others, because whoever, let's say the best Bal Tekeh in the community is a woman. Can she be blowing shofar and shul? So the Mishnah says, no, Mishenim mechuyev bedover. And in order to be Motzi others, you have to be Mechuyi B'dover. So Rabbi Shlomo Levilner had this suggestion that maybe Kohanim are Potter from Parsha Zohar, just like women are Potter. So he deleted the whole essay because his brother, who is a bigger Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Tzalal Levilner, told him that it's ridiculous. We don't know exactly what part was ridiculous. Did he think that Kohanim are drafted into the army? That's what he thought was wrong. Or he thought maybe you don't draft Kohanim into the army, but there's still mechuyev in Parsha Zohar. We're not sure what. But Rabbi Shlomo Levilner left it in a table of contents. He writes what the topic was in that essay. And my brother told me to leave it out because it's wrong. So he doesn't tell you why it's wrong. He tells you what he originally said. So that's the Rambam's opinion. That when they had Elef Lamata, Shtemasa, Elef Chalitzei Tzavah, Menashe gave 1,000 soldiers. Ephraim gave 1,000 soldiers, and Shevet Levi didn't give any soldiers. Rashi and Chumash says not so. Rashi and Chumash understands that Menashe and Ephraim are one Shevet. Each one gave 500. There was between the two of them, there were 1,000 soldiers, and Shevet Levi also gave 1,000 soldiers. And the Pasuk says there in Mechamis Midyan and Parshas Matos, I forgot the Loshon already, kol. The lashon is kol shevet. So the Rashi interprets kol shevet is to be kol is a ribui, to be marbe even shevet Levi. Even shevet Levi also served in the army. So that's so the simple reading of Parshas Bamidbar is that the Levim are not drafted into the army. That's they were not included in the original census. Then the Torah instructs Moshe Rabbeinu. Pasuk Gimel Lamed Gimel Halavim Lo Haspak the Besok Bnei Yisrael Kashatziva Semeres Moshe. The Levim are not included. Then Moshe Rabbeinu had to make was told to make a separate census of the Levim. He made twice. He made a census. Ben Chodesh v'mayla, and then he made a census. Ben Shloshim Shana v'mayla. So the first opening pasuk in chapter Gimel reads, "Ela told us Aaron and Moshe, v'yom dibar Hashem al Moshe behar Sinai." And then it doesn't tell you told us Moshe. Then it tells you told us Aaron, the descendants of Aaron, Ela Shmos b'nei Aaron, and so on. So the Gemara Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin in the second Berak in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, when did Moshe Rabbeinu become the parent, so to speak, of the children of Aaron? When the Rebbeinu Shlom told the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu had to transmit it to the Bnei Aaron. So then he became, then they became his toldos. Before he taught them the Torah, he wasn't considered as they weren't considered his toldos. After he taught them Torah, then they're considered his toldos. What's the relevance of this statement? So that's what the Chafetz Chaim writes, and you look at the first page in Shulchan Aruch Ibn Ezer, a few Achrenim write like this. If a couple is, for some reason or another, unable to have children, so they should really adopt. And adopting a child is a partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Rivya. Kaida Matan Torah, the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Rivya was Pruruvu Milus Ha'aretz, to populate the earth. We need people. If Adam Arish is not going to have any children, so that's going to be the end of the world. He's going to die. So you should have Pruvu Milus Ha'aretz V'Chib Shua. By the time it came Maimon HaSinai, the Rebbeinu Shlom decided he has enough human beings in the world. He doesn't need any more. So the whole mitzvah changed. The Gemara says it only applies to the Jewish people. After Matan Torah, the Pruvu is only obligatory on the Jews, not by Kodem Matan Torah, that it was told to Adam Arishin and to Noach in the end of Parshas Noach. And the whole nature of the mitzvah changed. According to the Rambam, the Gemara has a machlekes of Yechon Meish Lakish in the end of Perek Abba Yavimta and Yavamis, and in the end of Chorus in Perek Yesh Bechor, the Perek about Pidyon HaBen. There's one Perek there. Next to the last Perek in Bechor is all about Pidyon HaBen. So the Gemara has a machlekes of Yechon Meish Lakish. If a non-Jew was married and had children before he converted, then he converts, is he in fulfillment of Piriyah V'Rivya with the Goyisha children they had from before? So we pass on like Rabbi Yechanan, Machlag Zabi Yechanan Meish Lakish, we pass on like Rabbi Yechanan that he is Yotze with the children that he had before. So many learn Pshat in the Ramam. The Ramam says, when this guy who Ubon Avimo, he converted and the children converted. So the Magen Mishnah learns Pshat, and many agree with the Magen Mishnah, that the only time the Ger is Yotze with the children that he had before is provided the children convert. But if they remain non-Jewish, then he's not in fulfillment of the mitzvah, Piriyah V'Rivya. Kodem Matan Torah, the mitzvah was just to populate the world, to milus ha'aretz. And even non-Jews were mechuyav. But after Matan Torah, the nature of the mitzvah is we should have children to secure the future of Torah, to be able to transmit Yiddishkeit to the next generation. And if a person has children and he lets them wild, leaves them loose on their own, and he doesn't transmit Torah ideas to them, he's not really in fulfillment of the mitzvah period. The mitzvah really is to have children and to transmit Yiddishkeit to the children. So even if a couple is unable to have their own children, they should adopt or they should support the yeshiva. That's how the Chafetz Chaim translates the pasuk Koyamar Hashem Lasari Sim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells those who are unable to have their own children, they should be machazikim b'ivrisi, they should support Torah. If you support Torah, malakasa v'kili yalada, if you're teaching Torah to others, the Gemara tells us that Ben Azai either never got married, or he got married and he got divorced. He didn't remain married, didn't have any children. So the Rambam quotes that Gemara. A person who's He's crazy about learning. He just can't see himself getting married. It's not for him. So the Rambam writes, "Ain biyodo avam." He's not in violation of the mitzvah period of you. Why not? It is biyodo avam. What if he just can't get himself to eat matzah? He's a vegetarian. He can't get himself to eat Korban Pesach. Yesh biyodo avam. Even if you're a vegetarian, you have to eat Korban Pesach, whether you like it, even if you choke on it. You have to eat Korban Pesach, and you have to eat matzah, even if you choke on it. You're mechuyev to do the mitzvahs. What do you mean? Marriage is not for me. You're mechuyev to go to a psychiatrist, or go to a social worker, whatever, psychologist, and he'll explain to you how you have to get married. So Rav Soloveitchik can explain, no, Ben Azai was a teacher. He was malamed Torah. He was a Tana. He was teaching Torah in public. So he was malamed ben chaver Torah. He had partial kima mitzvah he had. The full kima mitzvah is you should transmit Torah to your own children. You should have your own children, and you should teach Torah to your children. But b'di'eved, if that's not for you, you can fulfill the mitzvah partially by teaching Torah to others or by supporting yeshivas. L'machazikim b'ivrisi. So that's, the Gemara learns it out in this pasuk. The first pasuk in chapter Gim, Ela told us Aaron and Moshe. The children of Aaron are considered told us Moshe. Rashi quotes it from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the second parak in Sanhedrin. It's interesting, the Ramban and on this Sedra has a comment. Isn't it strange if you look how many, what the population was of every Shevet? Shevet Levi was so tiny. How come they were so small? You would think that they're such big tzaddikim. They probably had bigger families, no? Like today, the ultra-Orthodox have bigger families than everybody else. So how come Shevet Levi was so tiny? So maybe after they had the Mishkan and they're responsible for carrying all the clan Mishkan, maybe they were mizalzal in the covet of the Mishkan. Maybe then many would die. Mesa b'dei shamayim. Azara karev yumas. But here the census was taken before they started dealing with the Mishkan. How come Shevet Levi was so tiny? So the Ramban has a very fascinating suggestion. So some suggest that the Shevet Levi are going to be the rabbis, and Klal Yisrael has to support them. So the Baruch Shalom gave a break. He gave a break to Bnei Yisrael. There shouldn't be so many rabbanim because they'll be Bnei Yisrael will be taxed. They have to support more rabbanim, more Shevet. The bigger Shevet Levi is, so the more yeshivas. So the more you have to give them Maiserishim to support them because they're sitting and learning. That's what some of Farshim say. But the Ramban has an interesting suggestion. He says there's a Medrash Tanchumah on Chumash Mois that says that Shevet Levi was not Tachas HaShibud. Rashi and Chumash quotes it. In the Shibud Mitzrayim, you find Moshe Rabbeinu is floating around, Aaron is floating around. How would they have the ability to float around? If everybody was enslaved, everybody had to make... Everybody had to make bricks and they had to make buildings, piece of Ramses and everything. So how come Moshe and Aaron are floating around? So that's what the Medrash says. Apparently, Shevet Levi was never included in the Shibud. So Ramban says those who were suffering in the Shibud, they were blessed. They were blessed. Ken yirbe v'chen yifreitz. Kashianu oisam, ken yirbe v'chen yifreitz. But the Shevet Levi was never involved in the Shibud, so it wasn't Kashian Oysam, so they didn't have the blessing of Ken Yirba V'Chen Yifretz. So they quote that Rav Kook used to say, he lived in Eretz Yisrael the last years of his life, of quite a few years. So he, over 30 years, I think. So he, and it was under the British at that time. And the British gave the Jews a hard time, and the Arabs gave the Jews a hard time. So he pointed out, if you look into recent history, every time there's a setback and the Arabs or the British give the Jews a hard time, there's a big jump. 2-3 years later, there's a big jump ahead. Every setback brought history back. Later on, it went back to the direction that it was supposed to go. Every time there was something that seemed to ruin the yeshiva of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, later turned out l'tayva. So that's like the Ramban has on this week's Sedra, that the Shevet Levi was not blessed with the bracha of Ken Yirba V'Chen Yifreitz because they weren't suffering in the Shibud. It's interesting. We have a few times the pasuk Hazar HaKorev Yumas. You have it, I think, more than once. Maybe it's more than twice. I'm not sure. So once by the Kohanim. The Kohanim have to do the Hakrovas HaKorbonis. And Azara Korev Yumas, a non-Jew who will be Makru Korbonis, is Chai Misa B'dei Shemaim. Then you have it by the Levim. The Levim have to do Avodas HaMishkan, and they had to be appointed. Each one had to be appointed. The Gemara learns Pshat. The Gemara has a famous statement, Mishorish Hashir Chai of Misa. If one of the Levim is supposed to be with the orchestra, he's supposed to play music, he's supposed to sing. They had those who sang and those who played music. So if he's supposed to be a Meshorah, and then instead he goes to lock the gates or open the gates, Meshorah Shashir Chai Misa, because of this Pasuk, Hazar HaKorav Yumas, does mean he's a Zar. He's a Zar La'Oysa Avoida, he wasn't Nismana. The Levim had to be appointed. Usually the Kohanim appointed the Levim. I want you to be in charge of this gate, not that gate. And I want you to sing in the choir, not to be in charge of the gates. So Azara Karav Yumas, if he's a Zar to this Aveda, then it's also Chai Misa B'dei Shammai. They say Farchinach writes a big Chiddush, that din, a Mishor Shashir Chai Misa B'dei Shammayim, even applies to Kohanim as well. If a Kohen does the Aveda, that was Miuchad for another Kohen. So Rabbi Avraham Soloveitchik, she thinks, first, Rabbi Avraham quotes a Ramban and Sefer HaMitzvos is the same as the Sefer HaChinuch. He finds the whole thing very surprising. He thinks that Pashup Shat is not so. Pashup Shat is that's only a din in the Levim. And the Kohanim, all the Kohanim had a schus, they had the right to be Makir Karbon, so they're going to kill each other. So the Mishneh Taka says on one occasion they killed each other. Two Kohanim ran to the Mizbeach and each one wanted to do the Shechita of the Korban Tamid. Strictly speaking, the shechita of the Talmud is kasha bizarre. You don't even need a kohen to do shechita of karbonis. But by the karbonis tzibur, by the tminim u'masafim, the karbonis tzibur, the practice always was that only the kohanim did the shechita. That's what you see from the Mishnahs like that. So they used to have, they figured out a whole system. Who has the right to do the shechita of the karbonis? So the Mishnah in Yuma tells a story that once two young kohanim were running, the practice was, they would run towards the Mizbeach. Whoever got first up to the Mizbeach had the right to do the Shechita of the Korban. So two Kohanim ran, and one beat out the other one, and the other one who lost the race was so upset, he took his knife that he was going to shech the Korban, and he stabbed the other Kohen and he killed him. Then the father of the dead Kohen was there, and he saw the way they took the knife out of his son's heart, and they saw the son was still alive. He hadn't yet died. So the father who just lost the son was just killed in the Beis HaMikdash. He said, Baruch Hashem, the cliché is the knife didn't become tummy. So the Gemara says, what an idiot. He's more worried about the cliché is becoming tummy than about his own son. Shvichas damim in the Beis HaMikdash. So you see from the Gemara that they didn't appoint a specific koyin to do any specific avodah. They had to figure out, like a chalukas hashutfim and dinimam, who has the right, who has the schus to do this particular avoida on the Beis HaMikdash. Azara Karav Yumas by the avoida means a non-Kohen who'll do avoida. In the Bayi Sheni period, they used to have a sign up. When you go to visit near the Kohel Maravi, they still have this sign in, I think it's in Latin, either Latin or Greek, I forgot already what language it is, that the non-Jews are not permitted to enter this part of the Holy Temple, and if a non-Jew enters, they'll put him to death. So some say it's based on the Pasuk, Azara Karav Yumas, a non-Jew who enters Har Habayis is put to death. There is no such din. That's not pshat in the Pasuk. Azara Karav does mean a non-Jew. The word Zar does mean a non-Jew, and Karav does mean he walks in, and Yumas does mean Mises Bezen. It means Mises B'dei Shammai for a non-Kohen who does HaKrovis HaKarbonis. But it does mean that a non-Jew who walks in is Chai Mises B'dei Shammai. So they took a census twice of the Levim. One census from the age of Ben Chodesh Amayla, then the other census was called Zachman Ben Chodesh Amayla, then the other one was from the age of 30 and up, because they only did Avodas HaKarbonis from the age of 30. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Chulin at the end of the first Perek, Daf Chav Dalet, I think. The Gemara in Chulin points out there's a stira. Here it says from the age of 30, and then there's another pasuk that says from the age of 25. So which is it? Is it from the age of 30, the age of 25? So the Gemara says there had to be apprentices. They would come at the age of 25, and it took them 5 years till they learned how to play music and how to sing and how to do all the avodas halavim. It took 5 years to master the art. So the Gemara has a kasha that in Sefer Daniel, it says that the Jewish boys who were sent into Golus Bavel at the time after the Churban Bais Rishon, so they went to university to study political science. And then they would be advisors to the king of Bavel, the Melech Bavel. There would be politicians. So it says there that the whole graduate program was only 3 years. So how come over there it's 3 years, over here it's 5 years? So the Gemara has a machlokes. Is basically every graduate program should really take 3 years. But over here, the Avodas Halevim was more complicated, so this takes 5 years. This is the exception to the rule. But the rule is everything else you can master in 3 years. A 3 year smicha program. It used to be a 3 year smicha program. A 3 year graduate program in any other discipline. Or should I say the reverse? Maybe every discipline really basically takes 5 years. It should really be a 5 year smicha program. Every discipline takes 5 years, but politics is easier. So politics, you can master in 3 years. So that's a machlokes hatanoim, which is the rule and which is the exception to the rule. Is the rule 5 years and 3 years for the politics is the exception, or the rule is 3 years? So what's the difference? So the Rashash and some other Acharonim write that Tosfos has a kasha in Pirkei Avos. It says, Mishman Esrei L'chupa, he's supposed to get married at the age of 18. Then there's a Gemara in Kiddush in the end of the first parak where the Gemara talks about getting married. So the Gemara says if a person reaches the age of 20 and is still not married, so the Baruch Shalom is upset. Why didn't he get married? What's taking him so long? So Tosfos and all the Rishonim are bothered with the kasha. Here it says 18, here it says 20. Isn't it a contradiction? The Tosfos says, not a contradiction. You don't marry the first girl that you meet. You marry the first girl, the first date that you go out. You start trying to get married at the age of 18, and then you got to shake a leg. You shouldn't wait till after 20. The maximum they give you is till 20. That's how Tosfos and many Rishonim say. So the Rashash, in one place in Ksubis, writes like this, and some Sfaradish Acharonim write like this, also interesting. They think it's really a machlokes hatanoim, because the Gemara says, what should a person do? He has a choice. Should he first learn Torah, or should he first get married? Which should he do? So the Gemara says, it doesn't make sense that he should first get married and then learn Torah. When he gets married, he has a responsibility to make a panasa to his wife and they're going to have children. If he has to make a panasa, how will he be able to learn? So when a person wants to learn, so the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos gives you a whole program. Between the age of 5 and 10, they teach the children all of Tanakh. Then the age of 10 and 15, they teach the children all of Mishnayos. Then starting from 15, they teach them Gemara. So how long do they have to learn Gemara that they should develop a derech? 3 years or 5 years. So that's what they say. Well, that's a machlekes hatanoim, whether basically all disciplines can be mastered. You can get the knack of the discipline in 3 years. And the Levim is a Yetz Min HaKlal that it took 5 years. Our world disciplines really take 5 years. And politics is the Yetz Min HaKlal. So that's what a few Achrayim say, that's the teretz to the steer in the Gemara. You have to give him either 3 years or 5 years that he should be able to pick up a derech and learning, and then he can get married. Before he develops the derech and learning, it does make sense to tell him that he has to get married. So that's the discussion that the Gemara has on that pasuk, on the two psukim. One pasuk says the Levim were counted from the age of 30 and up, and the other pasuk says that they do the avodah from the age of 25. So the Gemara explains they come as apprentices in the age of 25. They don't do the avodah till the age of 30. Then the Gemara points out the Levim were substituting for the Bechorim in Bnei Yisrael. So the Avodah used to be Bepharim, and then when they all worshipped the eagle, so then they were all rejected, and Shevet Levi, none of them worshipped the eagle, so they were taken instead. So the pasuk says, every Levi patted a Bechor, and those 273, how many were there? I forgot already. I think 273, that there were more Bechorim than there were Levim, so they had to give 5 shkolim each. But what about the Behemoth Avim Tikhu Tachas Behem Tom? So that doesn't tell you a number. How many? There must have been more Behem Tom than there were Behem Salavim. So the Gemara says, Se Echod min Halavim, Potar Kama Pitri Hamoirim of the Yisraelim. So the Gemara learns out halacha lemaisa from that, l'doris, that if you use this set, petach hamor tifta b'seh, if you use this set to be poida petach hamor, and then you give it to the kohen, he can be used later on to be poida another petach hamor. There's not a din that this was pidyon petach hamor can't be used twice. Because in the original days of the Levim, at the end of Parshas Bamidbar, you see that se echad pata kama pitri hamar. So it's a din l'doris also like that. The Gemara learns that from that pasuk. The concluding pasuk in the parsha will close, but this, the concluding pasuk in the parsha says, "V'layu baliris kevalas hakodesh amesa." The levim were not permitted to be around when the kohanim would put the klishores, the kelim, and the beis hamikdash into the sacks when they would have to travel. So, different rishonim wrote minyan hamitzvah, sefer hamitzvah. I think the smag, one of the rishonim writes, this does belong in the minyan hamitzvah. This is only harasha. It doesn't apply to deris. So the Mishlam Melech wrote a sefer derech mitzvah. He has a sefer parashas drachim. So in the back of the parashas drachim, he has the whole kuntris derech mitzvah secha about the minyan hamitzvah. So he discusses that. He says that the statement of the smag seems to be against the Gemara, because the Gemara says that there was once an incident in the Bais Sheni period. The luchas were removed from the Kodesh HaKadoshim towards the end of the Bais Rishon period. It says in Dira Ayam, Yoshua HaMelech was going as the luchas. Very problematic. Why? The pasuk in Dira Ayam gives you an explanation. Why? It's very unclear what the explanation means. But he was going as the luchas. He put them in a chamber in the basement that Shlomo HaMelech originally, when he built the Bais Rishon, he followed the Megillah B'Ksav that David HaMelech gave him. David got it from the Novi. And he built the Beis HaMikdash according to all the instructions, according to the blueprint. And the blueprint had it that there has to be a chamber in the basement to put the Oren when the time comes. So the days of Yoshua HaMelech, they put it there. It's unclear exactly why. What was the cause? So then the Gemara has a whole historical debate. Where were the Luchas during the Bais Sheni period? The Mishnah in Yuma says that the Luchas were not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Oren was not there, but where was it? So there are different opinions. So the Rambam takes a stand. It's a question, why did Rambam take a stand? It's the historical machlokes. The Rambam takes a stand. He holds that it's halachic machlokes also. So in the Mishnah Torah, he assumes la'alocha that the luchas were there in the basement the whole Bais Sheni period. So the Gemara tells a story according to that Tana. One of the famous story, I think, is the Hidden Ark or the Lost Ark. There's a movie, I think, about that. So one of the Kohanim in the Bais Sheni saw that there was one of the tiles on the floor was not in place. And he realized that it had a ring on it. So he picked it up and he saw it's a trap door. And there was a staircase going down to the basement. He walked down to the basement and he saw the Orim with the Lucha. The Orim was there with the Kruvim. And he died because of this possible. So they had to take him out after he died. So the Gemara asks, but the Kangaroo went every year into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to do the Abayda on Yom Kippurim. He never died. You see, it's permissible to look at the Orem with the Krum. So how come that fellow died? So the Gemara says, no, it's a Din L'dur, it's not a Hayrasha, but the Din L'dur is only applies when the Orem is Shaloi Bim Kaimai. Either when they're traveling in the Midbar, so the Orem is no longer in the Kodesh Kadosh, but they took everything apart, they took everything down, or in the Bais Sheni period when the Orem is in the basement. When the Oren is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where it belongs, then you are allowed to look. When it's Shelo b'Mkomo, then you're not allowed to look. Why? What is that all about? So the Gemara says that in marriage, there are two parts, the Erisin and the Nisun. When you have Erisin, Kiddushin, but you didn't have Chuppah yet, so the girl is still living with her parents, and the Arusa is not allowed to be living with her husband, but after Nisun, after Chuppah, then they're allowed to live together. So the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Israel is one is compared to a marriage. That's the last three psukim in the Haftarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu married the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu married the Jewish people. The whole Shir Hashirim describes the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Israel, like one of a husband and a wife. So so there are two stages. So when the Oren is b'mkomo, it's treated like a Nisuin. So when they have Nisuin, so the mom is living together. So you can't say they're not allowed to. The husband is not allowed to look at his wife. They're allowed to sleep together in the same bed. But when they're Arvin and Shalabim Kaimai, so then the marriage is a little bit weaker. So it's only like Erison. The Rebbeinu Shalom didn't divorce us after the Churban Bais Rishon. the Navi says that the many Bnei Yisrael assume that the bris, the covenant, is no longer binding, and they don't have to keep any mitzvahs anymore. So the Navi says, "This is a sefer krisos asher shalachti liimchem. I never gave a get to the Jewish people. You're still married to me. You're still obligated to observe all the mitzvahs of Torah. So we're still married, but it's only like erison. And when the Arvin is bimkomo, then it's like nisuin. Then you're allowed to look at each other. We're living together. But when the Arvin is shalom bimkomo, it's only a pchina like erison." So the Mishnah Melech, when he develops this whole theme based on the psukim and the gemaras, so he quotes the half a minute. So he quotes the pasuk towards the end of the haftarah. What's the difference between ishi and bali? It means my husband. So he says ishi means my husband of Erison. Bali means my husband of Erison. So when the third Beis Hamikdash will be built and the Aram will be back again, b'mkoma, we will refer to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam as ishi means nisuin, as opposed to bali, which means Erison. Should all be zechet to see Binyan Beis Hamikdash very soon. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.
Amen. Have a good Shabbos, Rabbi.
Nothing tomorrow?
10:30
tomorrow. Perfect.
Yeah, it's okay. Very good. See you tomorrow.